Folks, welcome back to the FinFab channel, the podcasters channel, the EMBC network, the IHL channel, The Works, with a new show, a discussion that I always enjoy. When you hear FinFab, it's all about fitness. And when you hear about, you know, the business, it's also about, you know, that part of the transaction of this world. And my guest is a driven, experienced director. He's a coach, a martial artist. My favorite, you know, thing is always martial arts. And, you know, we're going to talk a lot about that today. Over 30 years in the making for him. So I, you know, I love that when I hear that. It just gets me, you know, excited because I love the world of martial arts personally. And so he's also a seasoned instruction program developer. I mean, he's just like, you know, coaching is his passion. And I think he states it as martial arts fuels his soul. And, you know, that's a powerful thing. So I have with me Coach Chris Malgeri. Chris, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
I call you Sensei, Shihan.
Chris is great.
Chris is good.
Chris, you know, everything is the only difference between me and everybody, anybody younger than me, or I started first. Right. I mean, all a teacher is somebody who started first. Right. That's it. So there's nothing more interesting or special about me. And that makes me me. I'm just, you know, I'm just here to help the next group.
I love that. You know, just funny. You said that. So I have a similar analogy. I say, you know, it's like military, right? It's just different ranking. We all do the same thing. You know, you get experience, you earn some ranks, and that's how you do it. And martial arts is military arts. So it's an interesting, you know, piece. But yeah. So, first of all, welcome to the show. And
thank you.
This is exciting, and you do have a lot. You have a company, you have, you know, a whole system that you coach. We're going to talk about the coaching part, the clients, what drives people, how you can help people, and so on and so forth. But before we get into all that good stuff, you know, I just want to hear about your background in martial arts specifically, and what got you into the work you do, and the coaching, and the program development and all that. But martial arts is definitely something that I love, because I actually been in martial arts since I was 9. I'm 53, so it's a long time. And I enjoy it. I've been through different arts, so and I love the world of it. And I know anybody that's been in martial arts or has anybody that they know in the martial arts space. It's someone you always learn from, because there's a lot of stuff that the martial arts provides in terms of the environment. So let's talk about your journey that got you into
Today. Well, my journey is a little bit goofy, actually. I don't have I didn't get beat up as a kid. I had a wonderful set of parents that brought me up, and you know, I had a generally lower to eventually middle class background. Everything was wonderful. I had great, you know, great parents that took care of me, loved me, me and my brother. But after my mother and father divorced, I would wait for my father to get home from work, and sometimes we were late traveling. And where I lived in the Metro Detroit area at the time, later at night, they had this thing called Kung Fu Theater. It was, you know, you're looking at this, you know, like mid-70s at this point, right? So you're looking at horribly amazing Kung Fu movies, right? If we can say those two things at the same time. So Five Fingers of Death and all these kind of things. So I would wait for him, and he would get home, we'd watch these movies. He really liked, we watched the cowboy stuff, which never really clicked with me, but you know, that's fine. Knights in Shining Armor, Ivanhoe, Camelot. So we're watching all these things, but Kung Fu is the thing. So then fast forward a few years later, we had eventually moved to Connecticut. I was actually born into Connecticut, moved to Michigan, back to Connecticut, back to Michigan a couple times. And I kept pestering my parents, I want to learn. And at that time, there weren't a great number of options, right? There are a couple schools locally, and they kind of put me off for a little while. So I'd go to the library, and I would get the books, and I would mimic what I could and try to understand what I could, and you know, whatever limitations there were. My very first thing was a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles tutorial comic book of how to do karate with all the terms and how to do it. I was fascinated. So, but that goes to show you how far back I go, because Ninja Turtles was like brand new, right? It was, so I'm sure you would be aware, this is pre Power Rangers, pre all that we have today. So the idea of martial arts back then was not what we have now. It was sort of like a subculture kind of thing. Weird people do martial arts, or it was starting to be martial arts for kids is very good for discipline, respect, and those kind of things. Mm-hmm. But it was weird back then, right? So we went to eventually where I lived, the Cheshire, Connecticut YMCA, and I started with a wonderful instructor, Greg Kevorkian, who taught the sort of like a basics of the Okinawan Te system, right? So a karate system. So he learned Tang Soo Do and he learned Okinawa Te in the military, so that he would just teach a couple of days a week at the YMCA, and just for the love of it. Now, this is a guy who played minor league football. He was an amateur bodybuilding champion. So like fit dude, right? Like, you know, it was amazing. Very structured, very disciplined. First thing out the gate, you smoke, you drink, you're out of my class, that kind of thing, right? Very focused. Not violent or anything in any way, but direct. Like, this is the way it is, and that's it. So I learned from him. I trained with him all the way up through high school. I was hooked, right? And wonderful guy, great lessons, you know, good, solid martial arts background. And then after graduating high school, we moved back to Michigan. I was searching around because, you know, I'm kind of fish out of water now. You know, I left my teacher, and now what do I do next? And I happened on let's call it a modified form of American Kenpo. Okay, it was a neat enough system, interesting guy, but it was my first experience with a more financially motivated dojo than a functionally motivated dojo, right? It is what it is, right? So, you know, take that for what it is. But during that time, I was trying to explore what my options were. And I read in a magazine about, perhaps you heard Paul Vunak, very, very popular at that time. He was really pushing Jeet Kune Do and Filipino martial arts. And then I started to see the articles by Dan Inosano, Burton Richardson, these guys in the magazines. I used to have stacks of magazines, right? Mm-hmm. And then it just got too much to keep a hold of, right? It was just insane. Magazines are no longer a thing pretty much unless they're online, but you know, I had boxes of them at one time, as I'm sure many of my age would probably still have. So I called the Inosato Academy in California and said, hey, is there anybody, how do I do this, right? So they said, first, you can buy Inosato's videos. He had produced a 6-volume set from Tortoise Videos on Filipino arts. It's still considered probably the first really in-depth look at Filipino martial arts, right, of the time, right? And then I got involved. Fortunately, there was a certified instructor of the Inosato Academy named David Hatch, and he lived 45 minutes, an hour, depending on traffic, away from me in Michigan. And he would be end up becoming like my second dad, right? I love this guy. I'm still in contact with him. I train with him whenever I go back to Michigan. He's fantastic. And he got me into this world of martial arts. It's kind of nucleus is Dan Inosano, right? That's kind of the world that I'm in. So Inosano, to me, he's like the one who opens all the doors, right? We know large part about Muay Thai because of him. We in the population of martial artists at the time, he was one of the first guys to start really advocating for Muay Thai training. Apparently in the 70s, but by the time I got to him, it would have been 92 is when I met David Hatch, 92 into 93. So that's where I met, through training with David Hatch and getting involved with the Inosano program, I met my Thai boxing teacher, Ajahn Surachai Sirisut. I met Eric Paulson, my catch wrestling, combat submission wrestling, jiu-jitsu. The dude's amazing. And Paulson is just on another planet. Sometimes I don't think his brain works like normal people. He's just phenomenal. My French boxing instructor, Salam Asli, who's unfortunately passed away. Herman Sawanda, one of my Penjak Sila teachers, again, who's unfortunately passed away. And all of these guys that I became associated with, I trained under, became certified under. It happened because of my connection with David Hatch. And then, so he kind of brought me through the rankings as being my senior, but eventually, you know, because we spent so much time together, like we took our Thai boxing test together. We took a bunch of our French boxing tests together until he said, I'm not doing this anymore. You keep going with it. So eventually I learned what's called a silver glove in French boxing, because he allowed me to sort of just go, right? To go off on my own. I got heavily involved in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu with my current coach, Marcelo Montero, who is in Indianapolis. Amazing coach, very good friend, amazing coach. I get really involved with that. Did competitions, train other people for competitions, MMA, that kind of thing. So it's just the exploration of martial arts as a culture that fascinates me, right? I like to learn the individual martial arts as they are, right? And then how they intersect and where they intertwine, right? I think that comes from, because when I would go to an Inosano seminar, he would open the door to say, here's some Filipino martial arts. We do that for a couple hours. Then we do the Junfan JKD method. And then he would do some Muay Thai, perhaps. A lot of Penchak Silat, which was fascinating to me. And then a lot of times he would say, if you want to go deeper in XYZ thing, go see, for example, some certain knife things that he was teaching. Really, really cool empty hand against knife. And I was like, can we do more of this? And the seminar is almost over. And he goes, well, go talk to a guy named Bill McGrath. I don't know who this guy is. And he eventually becomes my PKD Tertia International teacher, right? I started with him around 95. So a lot of times, Inosano himself, who was just, it's hard to fathom the amount of material and information this guy has. But a lot of times, he's just the guy that points you in the direction. So he sent me to Herman Suwanda. He sent me to my Wing Chun teacher. But, you know, I think around 19 at the time, 20 at the time that I'm getting involved with Dave. So I've got a lot of free time. You know, I'm in college, but at the time my dad would drop me off at school when he was going to work. So we're looking at, you know, 7 in the morning. I don't have classes till 9. I'm in what at the time was a rather beat up gym at Oakland University in Rochester, Michigan. Lovely school, by the way. No. Now it's amazing. Like, Oakland University now is fantastic, but we would train in the morning, and then I'd go to classes, then I'd train some more, then I'd go to classes, eventually got a training partner. We met in a Japanese language class, and we kind of hit it off, and we would just train all the time. So I was able to not only be exposed to a great wealth of information by fantastic instructors, but I had time, right? Now, I'm 52, I got 4 kids. Time is a commodity, like that's precious, right? It's a different thing now, but for decades, like maybe 10 and a half years or so, I was able to put in a lot of time just because I had it, right? And then out of school, we opened the gym and it just went from there.
That's quite a bit of history, and it's a rich one. Mm-hmm. and very diversified one. And I love how you've tested quite a bit. You know, you had guidance, you had the ability to test and really learn different skills and different styles. Mm-hmm. And sure. I love what you said about learning one art on its own and then basically do another one and then combine all that stuff in your own way. And that is, mm-hmm, actually a lot of great artists right now, martial artists, yeah, they've done a, mm-hmm, few arts, you know, not just one. They learn a little bit of this, a little bit of that, karate, BJJ, judo, aikido. They mix up a little bit of Filipino stuff, some kung fu stuff, you know, or styles. There's so many things. I mean, you start with Okinawan, you know, karate, which is a very, you know, aggressive karate, if you want to call it that way. It's more, mm-hmm, of a full contact as opposed to some traditional. I mean, I started with Dosho Rokan, which was more traditional, but we did obviously the, you know, a lot of, you know, sparring stuff, but it's not, mm-hmm, as to the level of when you talk Okinawan karate, it's known to be just like, you know, in your face, boom, boom, straight up. Mm-hmm. And so that's pretty cool. And then you went to Muay Thai, and that's another one that is very, like, you know, heavy, you know, impact, you know, driven types of arts. And then you talk to some Kung Fu, and then, you know, the weaponry styles of the Filipino arts and things like that. That's another one that's pretty, you know, intense. BJJ, you know, and jiu-jitsu stuff, you know, that's all combat driven, you know, some nice little locks and blocks and, mm-hmm, and takedowns, sure, and all the stuff. So it's a combination. You can handle all different things. And, you know, in that discussion, I love, you know, the one thing that probably people can extract here is that you've had so many instructors or teachers or coaches or mentors. But one thing in common is that in this world of martial arts, people teach, educate, and share knowledge. It is amazing mm-hmm. how they're willing to give and they're willing to share
Absolutely.
More.
Absolutely.
It's a unique concept where other areas sometimes in the world, people keep their arts or their styles or their knowledge to themselves because it's, I don't want competition. This is one area where it's not competition. I teach the next best, you know, person in this art. It's okay. You know, I'm still going to be the ranking officer. I'm still going to be the sensei. So it's like, you know, oh, when this guy's going to become, you know, fifth degree, he's going to beat my, you know, my beat me up. It doesn't work that way. There's a respect level. There is a sense of really honor. You know, it's a whole different world of, it's mystical in a way when you think about it, right? It is not your day-to-day world. It's a very unique environment on its own. It's a world on its own, literally. I mean, we can call it that way. So thank you for sharing all that. And I know you learn not only, and now it's funny because you said, you know, my thing was goofy. It was not the same. And watch the movies. You know, it's funny because those old style kung fu movies were I think they're still the best. I mean, I'm sorry, but you watch some of these things.
Good.
I mean, there's a lot of special effects and cable stuff and fun, but really these guys were good. I mean, you know, it was cool. I mean, when you're a kid, I mean, you just start mimic those things, you know, and you kind of you feel good about that, right? Anyone that can watch these things, as a matter of fact, there's I think some apps on TV that you can download. They still play these old kung fu movies,
right? Like the Shaw Brothers movies and all.
All like the traditional Chinese, you know, 100% kung fu with the fights and the challenges and all the stuff. And you know, even Jackie Chan has some old ones. I don't know if you've seen some of those original ones. You know, Jet Li, you know, had some of those as well. And I'm just talking about some of the famous, you know, martial artists in the movie style. Mm-hmm. Now, you also talked about, you know, French boxing. Now, are you referring to Savate? Is that the one?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Savate.
Yeah.
Around 95. When I started with my kind of like my, I call him my Kung Fu dad, like Sifu in Chinese martial arts, because that's, I went to David Hatch for Filipino martial arts. And I wanted to learn the Bruce Lee method, Jun Fan Ju Kun Do. And because of his experience with Inosano, he kind of took a look at me, how I moved from my previous experience, and said, well, you would probably like French boxing. So he introduced me to what he had of French boxing, right? Because he was already training with the man who would become my coach, Salam Asli, right? An amazing, he's got his own really cool story. It's, I'm sure you can find, there. He's got YouTube, which, all of his old videos of Panther Production back in the day, they're all now on YouTube. It's pretty easy to find the stuff. But Savate was, in one sense, it may look a little bit more like Taekwondo or Karate versus, say, Muay Thai, right? When you look at Muay Thai, the stance and the kick and the go, wow, that's it. When you look at Savate and they're wearing the tights that look like really long wrestling tights all the way, you kind of go, I don't know what's going on with this one. And then, but I got hooked quick, right? When I'm watching the kicks and the spinning kicks and the combinations of kicks, I'm like, oh, there, I get it, right? So my teacher, Dave's, his connection to Savate was because it was part of what is included in what Bruce Lee investigated in his era, right? But then we've got also, because of Inosanto, we've got Salim Asli, who traveled from France to train with Inosanto specifically. Now he's teaching French boxing on seminar and whatnot. And I got connected with Salim pretty early on. I think we did our first official seminar with him, like 95 is when I started testing with him and went through the program. And it's amazing, right? It's a fantastic program. They have it's kind of like, if you imagine a wrestling shoe, but with a harder toe. It's awful, right? First seminar with Salem, he kicks me in the liver. I was done. I was like, you know, because I'm feisty. I'm sort of nervous. I've got that twitchy energy. And he's telling me to calm down. He's telling me he's going to kick my butt. And he's not wrong, right? And he's like, okay, calm down. And then he's like, okay, whap. And then he fuerte to the liver. And okay, that's fine. But I was hooked quick, right? I know that... historically, if you look at the old form, you see the one arm close, arm extent, you see in the pictures and everything. Now it's very, very focused on beautiful hands, combination of the hands and the feet. But then because Salem was such a historian, he would take you through kind of the eras, Right. Well, this is why they had their arms like this at one time. And in one time, we did, before the English boxing and French boxing went like this, it was all like palm strikes and slaps, right? There was no closed fist. They concentrated on the shoe. And back then it was like a dress shoe. I mean, it must have been awful to get kicked back in the day, right? I mean, it's bad enough now, right? But back then, and sort of the historical lineages and how Savate changed. And then Savate as a sport, right? So boxe francais as a sport versus Savate as a combat system, right? It was just gruesome. It's a horribly awful thing to do to another human being, right? It lacked what I would call like the mental, spiritual, emotional development of some other martial arts, right? Because it was just, I got to save my life, right? And then you get the French cane system and the baton, the staff. So it's really interesting because, well, not French, but of somewhat European descent, to have a European look at martial art, especially in the 90s, it was really interesting, right? Because these things were not being explored all that much. Savate is potentially the one martial art that stayed intact as Europe was going through all the world wars and everything. A lot of what we would think of as European-based martial arts have sadly have passed on. So that was a neat connection as well, right? Savate is phenomenal. It never caught on to the way I think it could have, because if you look at it, somebody in Taekwondo, yeah, we got that too. And like, if you look at Muay Thai when it first came, you could not confuse Muay Thai for karate. There was no confusion. You know, if anybody said in another system, we got this too, they were full of beans. That was it. Nowadays, everything has merged so much. Now the secret techniques of these styles that never had a kick like Muay Thai, now they do. Okay, cool. You could just say you took it. It's okay. We know you stole it. It's all right. You know, but to keep up with Muay Thai, you better steal the kick. You better steal the knee and the elbow. Like you gotta figure out a way to keep up with these guys, right? And so a lot of the guys, they sort of, you can think about Inosano as like the nucleus of the atom, and all the other guys that they're associated around with him, because he's just such a historian and such a researcher that you know, he would train with all these people too, and then he would encourage us as his affiliates to go out, hey, you want to learn more about Silat? Go train with Herman Suwanda or Paul Dutoit or whoever, right? Back in the day. So it was really important. But I think, like you were saying before, now we share. But if you remember, there was a time even like in jiu-jitsu, and there's a Portuguese term that I don't want to butcher, but it basically translates to traitor, right? Like if you're training with this group, and you even looked at another group, they kick you out, right? So when I was living in Michigan, I'm heavily invested with Eric Paulson, combat submission wrestling. He mixes the kickboxing, boxing, catch wrestling, jiu-jitsu, everything. Is just the man's a genius, right? So a very high-level black belt moved into Toledo, Ohio at that time. And I'm like, this is cool, a jiu-jitsu black belt. I can drive the hour to get some lessons in and get jiu-jitsu. And we're talking about it, and he goes, who are you training with right now? And I said, Eric Paulson. He said, well, you'll have to stop that. Like, you're telling me, like, I'm not used to that, right? Like, you tell me I can't train with somebody? I'm not buying that. And it was just that back in the day, they wanted their team to be their team, and that crossover wasn't that popular, right? So this is where my biggest fortune came with my teacher, David Hatch, is because even the things that maybe he started out like in Savate as a higher rank than me, he introduced it to me. But then when he saw I was going to keep going, and because Savate is heavily taxing on the hips and the lower back, okay? And he's a tall guy, very tall guy, and great kicks, but you know, he just didn't want to commit to the time it would take for him to keep going. We did our last test, I think it was our white glove test together, and he's like, nope, I'm done. You keep going, right? So whatever it is, in jiu-jitsu, he gave me my first lesson. He introduced me to people. But when I got involved and I met my current jiu-jitsu coach, Marcelo, he's like, nope, I'm not interested. I want to do the weapons. I want to do the kung fu and everything. You go do it. And then you come show me the cool stuff. So he would send me out. So he never restricted my point of view, right? Like sometimes if you're in my school, you train with me, you don't get to train with anybody else. That was not unheard of when I was coming through. Right now, I think it's more flexible. I'm sure there are people that are like this, right? Some people are perhaps intimidated, insecure, right? But he would actually send me out and say, "Hey, you know, I'm not grappling for 6 hours. You go, dude." I mean, you know, being an older gentleman than me at the time, you know, me in my early 20s, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go grapple, right? And then that got me into jiu-jitsu and eventually MMA competitions and stuff. But because he was an open door and he never restricted where I was going, even if it meant I may outrank him at some point, right? He didn't care, right? Like, there's no skin, you know, he didn't have to be the man, even though he's the guy that I owe it to, right? He never restricted me. Sometimes he kind of pushed me out, like jiu-jitsu especially. We did our first Muay Thai test together, and that was a great training time together with him. We trained so much that like our legs would shank and cramp up, right? Because you gotta for the you know the testing and everything. We did our Indonesian Silat test together, so there were some things that we actually started at the same time. But yeah, okay, we started at the same time. Certain things were still ranked at the same time, but he's the guy, right? He's still my senior. He's still my, you know, my sifu. There was never that, like, I'm a training partner to him, right? I never understood that to be the case. I always understood that to be the case that this is the guy that's opening up my world, right? Because if I had been stuck with somebody else, I could have easily fallen into the trap of somebody says, hey, this is it. This is all you need. And at that time, I might have fallen for that, right? I might have thought, hey, that's all I need to do and followed one guy and not being able to see the breadth and width of you know what I was able to see because he didn't have an ego to say that you know I could be better or there was none of that right and I think that's a rarity in a lot of ways which is you know it's very interesting to me the I'm glad it's changed now. You can't do that easily because it's all on the computer, right? All you got to do is log in and you can find any information you want. So I can't really hide stuff from anybody, even if I wanted to, right? I think that's okay too, right? I don't think we should be hiding. I don't think there's no one person is magic, right? No one person possesses all knowledge so that he can divvy it out when he sees fit. That's the kind of silly kung fu movie things that I think people fell into at a time, right?
You know, I'm listening to you, and it's amazing because, by the way, as I said, folks, if you're watching or listening, yeah, this is the fuel of the soul for mm-hmm. Chris. Yeah. Chris really is so passionate about this, and it is a beautiful this discussion just for the concept, because you're right. Historically, every art was more like in a bubble. This is our art versus the other art. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you know, which art is better, more effective.
Right.
There were even challenges. I mean, back in this, Bruce Lee got challenged too, you know, and many of mm-hmm. those, you know, like, oh, your Chinese art, you know, this art, the other one, and all around the world, there's arts. And again, today you're talking about Indonesian and Filipino and stuff like that. A lot of people didn't realize that these arts go so far back, and so many countries have different varieties of variations of arts, you know, and especially with the weapons and the knives and the sticks and mm-hmm. the batons and all the stuff. I mean, again, I mentioned Savate as the French thing. It is. They have their own, and it's pretty powerful, as you said, and it can kick somebody's butt, you know. Ultimately, guys, this is not something you train because you're going to go out there and just, like, you know, pick a fight.
Sure.
But all these arts are effective. You know, I don't think there's an art, like, you know, I sometimes look at some posts and things like that. People are criticizing some other arts. Like, a good example, you know, you watch Aikido videos, right? And I read the comments, and it annoys me sometimes where, oh, you try that in the real world, this doesn't work. You know what people don't realize: when someone is demonstrating something, they're showing you the basic moves or whatever. That's just the like the structural stuff, they can apply in real time. I mean, even Tai Chi, they have a combat Tai Chi version. You know, it's not just the Tai Chi that you see in the street where you're just moving your hands and going in. You know, there's so many things. But as you advance and you get immersed into the world of martial arts, you understand that, you know, every single one of those, you get taken by an Aikido guy, the real stuff, they'll take you down, my friend, you know, and they know how to do it and with grace. And it's not like, you know, here's my hand, take it, because that's what it looks like in the videos. They actually can take combat too. You know, there's many things. I mean, I've studied Aikido under one of my umbrellas, and it's pretty cool stuff. I mean, you can actually absorb people's energy very easily. You're not in a rush. There's Ki and there's Aiki. So you can do both sides. You can go offense or defense, and all the stuff works. You know, I've done karate traditional, which, you know, yeah, you have to have those extended moves and all the punches, and, like, you know, it's the, as you said, the models and where the hands go. You know, every art in Taekwondo is different. You got to get loose on your legs and your feet and I've tried different things, and, you know, the beauty of, and you're right, some schools, they don't want you to go to another school because you're like, you know, you're supposed to be loyal to this art. And that's the traditional stuff. That's history. We live in, I think the modern and the evolution was that this is all going to be open. And with, as you said, with today's opening and the internet, you can learn almost every single. Now, obviously, learning from a video is one thing. Learning with an instructor is another, or a sensei or sifu or a professor is another. Obviously, being immersed in real. I mean, martial arts, you don't just, you know, figure out a move and try to practice it. You got to do it and, you know, feel, you know, real bodies against you and so on and so forth, techniques and so on. But there is their stuff. But you can certainly pick up things. I mean, I post a lot of stuff on Faith and Fab channel and, you know, repost things from different schools and stuff because I love it. There's judo, there's wrestling, there's MMA, there's, you know, Aikido, there's karate, there's Kenpo, there's, you know, I mean, all kinds of arts, Filipino arts and so on and so forth. And it's all beautiful. And you know what? You can just enjoy the diversity and the adaptability of these arts and really the beauty of what they can do. Now, someone can say, well, you guys are talking about this. All the stuff is to hurt people and stuff. You know, I have yet to meet, you know, good martial artists that are going out there and hurting people. You know, I have not seen or met one. Maybe there's someone out there. Can they be brutal? Yes, but that's not what they train for. It is the passion, as you can see from this discussion. Both Chris and I, we just love this stuff, right? And we feel it, and we know it runs on our DNA, and it's beautiful. I had a couple of, you know, one real fight in my whole life that I would call a fight, and that's it. Never had something else that is as close. And I was self-defense. It was not like I'm looking for trouble. I was jumped by five people. So you got to do what you got to do. But you know, and that's one of the reasons, you know, when you train, you step. Now, one thing you learn, and that's another thing that I want to just touch on, Chris, since, you know, we are still immersed in the discussion before we get into the coaching and the business side of the affairs. You know, the concept of learning all these, you know, arts, you know, you learn different flavors, different applications, and you'll enjoy each one of them separately. They all kind of connect. They all have some beauty to them, and that's all there is. And you never know what you can use. And when you look at, you know, all of them, they all have their own weaknesses, you know, if you want to look in that way, or they have their own strengths. Now, if you combine these arts, you know, it's a beautiful thing because you can handle different situations as they occur. You handle, you know, you do Indonesian arts or Filipino arts. Now you can handle the batons and the knives and stuff like that. Right. You know, you do, you know, BJJ, you're good on the ground. You take someone down, they're gone, right? You know, you're in Taekwondo, you're faster on your legs. I mean, Savat, then you can knock someone. Muay Thai, forget about it. You get an elbow in there, it's over. You know, so there's a lot of stuff, but you have to enjoy, you know, these arts. Kung Fu is beautiful. I mean, you know, Jin Kun Do, I mean, it's a style on its own, and it's very alive. These are like really effective things. And but people also are learning to be respectful. As you said, you're training with him, but he's always going to be the guy that took you in. There's that respect. You will always see him as your higher, you know, entity and ranking officer, if you want to call it that way, because there's that. You learn that. It's part of the concept. And as you immerse more, you just appreciate what's going on around and you enjoy it more and more. And you can also teach it to others and it makes a big difference. Then you go talk about it on shows, you know?
So, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, so that was, you know, your passion. That's your fuel, right? And so,
absolutely.
You know, how did you, I mean, first of all, did you use that as your start point to train, coach, and instruct people, or like, you know, there's some sort of a transition that happened?
So at the time when I started training with Stephen David Hatch, I came to quickly realize I need human beings. I need bodies because I need practice partners, right? So he had a school in Canton, Michigan. I lived in, so, you know, I was getting there as much as I could with school and responsibilities. And, you know, there was a point where, so I'm living at home with my parents, and can I get the car? Because if I go train, that's 3 or 4 hours, right? I'm going to be gone, right? So there's logistics, right? So after graduating college, I say, okay, what am I going to do? I have a biology degree that I love biology. I love science. I love where this goes. But back at that time at Oakland University, you couldn't get a degree in exercise science. You couldn't get a kinesiology degree. Those things didn't exist, right? Nowadays, for somebody like me, but maybe wants to hedge their bets, if you're a young me, maybe you want to fight, you want to make it a career, but you could get a degree in exercise science, kinesiology. If I was smart, maybe I would have gone to finance or something to learn how to run a gym better. Whatever it was, this was kind of like a fledgling state in many things, right? Martial arts is a business. How those things were taken off, I think the Taekwondo people really had it nailed down a lot sooner than a lot of the rest of us did. But I basically started my school to get people to train with. So the way I looked at it was, I needed bodies, right? So I would just said, hey, I asked permission. I talked to Sufi David, like, what do you think about this? Because at the time I was training with him, I was also at the Kenpo school. I was training and I was teaching, but then I was sort of getting disillusioned by, you know, every 3 months you test and like all this kind of stuff. And you don't, if as long as you can do the form and moderately well do the technique, and I'm okay if you're like white, yellow, like if you're in the first third of your ranking and you're just being built up, cool, right? I'm not expecting you to do amazing things, right? But when you're testing for red and brown and higher level rankings, and, you know, this is one of the frustrations that I had, is you're relatively out of shape and you're not doing anything about it, right? You can come to me and be out of shape and say, hey, you know, I want to do jiu-jitsu. Cool. We can do something about the fitness, right? I'm all about the fitness, right? I'm loving that part. But if you're not even trying and you're just going through the ranks and doing your thing and you do your forms and you fake spar a little bit and you get your black belt, my mind was really shutting down at that time. Okay. So then I start to train. I'm training with my teacher, Dave, but I'm still teaching that. I said, well, you know, I got to get out of this. Do you mind? Can I start teaching? Right. Do you, you know, I needed to kind of get the blessing. I didn't want to step on anybody's toes because I'm just getting certified in the Inosano Association and things like that. So he said, okay. And I started to teach, and eventually it broke up into me opening up a school. So then I had this great group of guys in the morning. We would get together and train from like maybe 9 to like 11 or noon. We just hammer things out. They were a bunch of guys in college or had later jobs, you know, more regular age, right? So my life for a long time was, get up in the morning, train this group, go back to sleep, get up for my kids' class, train. Then we would train and go running or something like that, have dinner and go to bed. And I did that for a long time, right? So my, I kind of joke about it, and it was actually one of the biggest, let's call it business deficits that I had, is I didn't take running the school as seriously as I should have. Because I just wanted people to train with. Right. I didn't necessarily want to have a giant school and a people. And I think although we lasted a long time, I trained a lot of people. We had ups and downs, and, you know, sometimes we did well. I wasn't prepared for the business of running a martial arts school. Right. So there were schools that, in my opinion, did they have maybe the variety? For sure, nobody had the variety that I was offering. But even at the same time, the quality, that's a subjective argument. Maybe you think that guy's better. Maybe I'm better. I don't know. But for sure, we had a gym. It was a good gym. But there was too much going on, right? Then the financial issues of the auto industry crashing and everything else. By that time, I'm getting married and things are changing. My first child comes along and we're like, okay, it was just too much, right? But my biggest negative was not being as well educated in how to run the business, right? And I think if you're going to run a school, that's what you need to do. Like right now, I have a private gym and it's virtual. It's pretty easy for me as a guy with four kids that I homeschool. I can manage all that. And this is where my life is right now. And I like it because with the guys I've got, with the ladies I've got, I can get in deep in the art, right? I don't have 50 people in the class where I have to hope that I remember your name next time I see you, right? And that's a good thing if you're that guy, if you're that lady that can run the big school. But what I was noticing is like my teacher, Dave, he had a gym in his basement, right? I trained with years and years and years in his basement, right? Which is weird for the guy that's well over 6 foot. Like he had a low basement. That was tough for him, right? But here's a guy, he loves it. He's got his job at Ford. He's doing a great thing. He loves martial arts. He's teaching it. He continues to this day. He's always in shape, right? But I'm noticing, and I think one of the things that scared me was the people that kind of got businessy, they added inches, right? So we used to make this joke, right? Like every time you add a stripe to your belt, you add an inch to your belly, right? Because a lot of times people that as you get higher ranking, they're not training, right? So if I go into school and I see guys fifth, sixth, seventh degree black belt, and they're kind of like that. I'm sure you're great. You're a wonderful human being. I don't know how seriously I can take you, right? I really don't. Because I'm with a group of people. Dan Anasano's 88 this year. The guy's still training jujitsu, still doing all these things. He's the model, right? Then I have David Hatch still working out, still very lean, looking good for his age. He's amazing. I had a hard time balancing that, right? And unfortunately, that balance didn't work out for me to be able to maintain the gym. Part of it was burnout, right? It's a lot of work to run it. It was more work than it needed to be because you could argue that I overeducated myself in martial arts and undereducated myself at the time in business, right? So after we closed the gym, my wife got this wonderful opportunity. We moved to Alaska. And since then, I've been teaching small private groups, right? I have a private gym at my home. We work out like maniacs. I do a lot virtually. So on one hand, I don't have the gym that we originally envisioned. But on the other hand, I get to connect a little more deeply. And even the world that I left when I shut my gym down, the world is way different. Post-COVID, technology has so greatly improved. You know, a lot of people that I knew they were doing well, but they had to shut their gym down too through COVID. So all those really kind of fascinating changes all come about because I never really wanted a school per se. I just wanted to be able to fund my martial arts training, go to all the seminars, go to the camps, travel. And from Michigan, we would go to see Francis Fong in Atlanta. Then we would go to see Eric Paulson and Dan Anasano in California, right? Wherever we could go. At the time, a lot of my teachers would go to Indiana. They would go to Indianapolis sometimes. They were in that kind of Midwest area. And we used to bring seminars out. There was one year, we were doing a seminar with Dan Anasano, Larry Hartzell, Chai Sirisut. Like in a year, we'd have eight guys out, right? So that's financially challenging, right? If you don't get enough people to support a seminar. So that's kind of the why, right? I wanted to have people that I could train with because I kind of envision a lot of times you'll see in the gyms, you'll have the guys, especially competitors, they're kind of like beating everybody down so they can get better. But I like the ladder method, right? I'm going to get good, then you're going to get good, then we're going to bring each other up, right? And I needed people, right? And one of the really cool things about not being in front of Dan Anasano, Francis Fong, and these guys is we had to do it ourselves. I had to get guys good enough so that I could get better, right? So I couldn't just beat up on people. I've got to actually make you good, then you can help me get better than I can. And it was really interesting and really rewarding because of just the kind of little lessons you hear out of the corner of your ear, right? I'm in Atlanta with Francis Fong, and he's talking about like how to grow, right? How to get people better, right? And his whole goal in life, as he expressed it, was he wanted to make people better than him, right? Make martial art, make a Wing Chun person, create instructors that were far superior than he was, right? And that kind of hit me like a ton of bricks, right? Because that's what, in some sense, I feel like my teacher Dave was trying to do, all right? Although we were kind of doing a lot of stuff together, but his job was to make me as good as I could be. So my job has got to make all these guys good. Now, some of it is self-serving, that I want you to get good so I can get better. Absolutely. But then we're getting to a level where I've got some students where we're training, we're doing the stick. I'm like, wow, I'm having a hard time keeping up. Like, these guys are really pushing me. But you need to be out of your comfort zone, at least, like, I imagine a line, right? You got to have one big toe over that line in outside of your comfort zone at any given moment. Right. You should just live a little bit outside your comfort zone all the time. So you're being challenged all the time. And that was interesting because I got some guys that, you know, my best times and the best encouragement accolades I got was when Inosana would say, wow, your student's doing really well. Right. Because I came to find out later, that's the whole world to him. Right. It's okay. They expect me to know. By this point, if I walk in, I should know the basics. Like, he's not going to look at me today and say, oh, great, you know the basics. That's assumed. But if I were to bring my children in who know it now, if you see the students I've trained, then they go, oh, okay, good. So you are good enough to pass it along. You're doing your job. Right. So when they, and that was an interesting lesson two, right? Because what I learned was he's not looking at me, right? He's looking past me now, right? So when I'm bringing people to seminars, I remember one year we were in St. Louis bringing people to seminars, and I had this one kid. He became a doctor of traditional Chinese medicine, fantastic kickboxing, right? Like, he was very thin, beautiful. This kid could kick amazing. And we're working out together and going. And it was interesting because Inosano comes up and he says, wow, I think he's faster than you, right? But that wasn't a rip on me, right? He was like, oh, you trained him well, right? For me to make somebody better than me, at one point, we think about all these teachers who hold you back. He's looking at it the other way.
You know, Chris, I'm listening to you. You know, what you're referring to is concept that apply in business world, in real world, and in, mm-hmm. in true leadership and coaching and mentorship. That's how it's supposed to be. You know, you train people to be better than you. I mean, even as parents, you want your kids to be better than you. Well, in students, sure. You know, are the same concept. You want them to be better and move on because it's a legacy that you handed down to them that they will absolutely eventually take it. I mean, we look at BJJ and the Gracie. I mean, it's now all over the world. It's a whole thing. I mean, there's so many names mm-hmm. now that are brand names that come in from that same lineage that are happening, right? In all these arts have that. And so it's something that instills in us and it becomes part of our tradition. I love what you said. When you look at your hierarchies and they look at you with like really happy that your students are great because you're making them. And I love what you said. This is not, you're not the person that's going to stop, you know, a potential because you don't want them to become better because they're much younger, whatever, and they fester and so on. You know what? Let them be. They'll fly, they get better, and so on and so forth. I also love, you know, what you stated. I mean, it is true. As you advance in ranking and stuff, you do less training and more teaching. And so that kind of takes away. And obviously your fitness does take a little, you know, hit. And, you know, your concept is beautiful because you're balancing. You're aware that, you know, as mm-hmm. much as I go up in ranking and I'm still training people, I got to keep training because I need to keep in shape and keep up with them. And they keep me mm-hmm. in check. And so you are an active, you know, instructor and you implement that in your lifestyle. The other thing I wanted to just to comment on is the idea of the balance between your passion and the business, you know, acumen to it. And, and those two things can be sometimes very difficult because, as you said, you wanted to have a dojo and a gym because you wanted to train yourself and be part of, and live the martial arts, the passion. But running that, you know, there's a cost to it. There's stuff, as you stated, there are, you know, like Taekwondo has it, as you said, perfectly. They commercialize it so well, you know, there's, they can make it, you know, financially very fit and adaptable, you know, in the business world.
Sure, sure.
You know, because they have different rankings. I mean, you get, you know, tested, you know, more, the, you know, one belt, you can spend a few tests and so on. And then there's this competition, there's that, the other. So they made it a little bit more. Some traditional schools, they don't do that. It's really you earn your next rank and yeah, it's about, it's not about the money, it's about the art. And so, but finding that healthy balance can be very challenging and it's very difficult. And you're right. Not everybody, you know, goes to business schools to open, you know, a martial arts. Most of the people that open martial arts, they love the martial arts. If they happen to be business savvy, they're just, you know, kind of balance it out. But not everybody does that, and that's okay. So you've managed all that. I mean, obviously, you've had it for years, and you transited, you know, as you were moving to something smaller. And I love the idea that you can focus more, you know more people, now you can give more to them. And it's more personable and personalized, you know, approach. Which is what coaching and mentoring can be. I mean, because when you have large classes, you know, you're basically just giving instructions as a group, and that's about it, right? It's a little different. I mean, and anyone that's in martial arts, you wouldn't understand what we're talking about here, because this is exactly what it is. You know, the larger you are, you know, and by the way, that goes even in business world. I mean, the higher you are in the corporate hierarchy, the more you're so far from your staff and your teams and so on and so forth. Now, that's not a necessary rule, but it is the general, because, you know, some people can make it, like, you know, it doesn't matter what level you are, you can still be in the trenches with your teams and with your crew and whoever, you know, as a boss, as a leader. And it's the same thing here. It's the same concept. It just applies in this world as well as in the business world. Now you changed the model of, you know, for your business, and you became more into, you know, this, I guess, boutique, I would say, I'll call it virtual boutique.
Or, sure, sure. You know,
So now is that the wellness, the Synergy Center one, Synergy Wellness Center?
Right. So the Synergy Center is our hub for all of the things that my wife and I are passionate about in terms of physical, mental, and for lack of a better term, we'll call it spiritual health and wellness, right? So that could be anything from life coaching, that could be anything from nutritional wellness, obviously martial arts, different kind of fitness programs. My wife has a yoga program, dancing programs that she was trained in classical and folk Indian dance. Is part of, you know, my wife's family is originally from India. So we have that kind of component to it. So it's basically, the way I look at it is, if I'm going to be useful to you, a useful guide, right? A Sherpa, if you will. I got to know what you want to do, right? Martial arts is not for everybody. We used to have that tagline back in the day, but it's just not true, right? One martial art may speak to you, but you might fall out and do yoga, right? You get into the martial arts the wrong way, and you go to your first jiu-jitsu class and five guys just choke you out. You might not, you just like, sorry, done, right? So what is important is we got to find your why. We got to find your passion. What can you commit to and stick to get towards whatever goals you're trying to get to? I have no idea. Right. So what we want to do, we're going to consult a little bit. We're going to talk about some things based on your age, based on your current level of fitness, based on your current level of interest in something that we might have to offer you. Where can I help you? Where can I take you? Back when I had a gym, I would have people that were really, really super interested. They would come into Muay Thai and they would work it really hard. But they were really strange movement, you know. But if you put them on the mat, their jiu-jitsu quick. They just became really good at jiu-jitsu quick. It was a weird thing. And I have other people that came onto the mat, tried jiu-jitsu. They just don't like it. But man, you put them, they put the gloves on, and it's just awesome. I don't know. I have no idea by looking at you what you're going to be able to enjoy and commit to. Part of it is because I'm less about the end result, right? I like the journey. I like the path. I like how we're going to communicate and talk and guide. But I'm also less about the things, like what does it mean to be functional as a martial artist, right? Do you need to know how to fight? Well, okay, maybe. Who are you fighting, right? Do you have enemies that are waiting outside your door every day? If that's true, then maybe you just get a U-Haul and you move, right? Maybe, you know, like spend your money on moving somewhere safe, right? If that's even possible. So it may not be, martial arts might be a vehicle for your wellness, your sanity, your health. Martial art might be a vehicle for you to just move and explore ranges of motion in your body that you forgot about or didn't know exist. The martial arts that you do when you're 20, 30, 40, 50 even, they might not be the martial arts when you're 60, 70, 80. Now, there are a lot of guys competing in jiu-jitsu now that are much older, but there are far fewer. You can do jiu-jitsu a long time. Can you compete at 70 in Muay Thai? You can still practice it at some measure. But when you look at like what we call in the Indonesian martial arts, the kembangan, the dance forms that they do, I mean, I can do it from a chair. I can do it when I'm 80, right? So there's a longevity to martial arts. So first we figure out what's your why. Why do you want to do it? What are we focused on, right? Maybe it's not martial arts at all. Maybe it's Argentine tango or salsa or ballroom dance or something else. I don't know. So we'll figure out together sort of how we can guide this path, because people are in some way predictable. If you're not having fun, you're not going to do it, right? You're just going to stop, right? Now, should you have some discipline to keep trudging? Yeah, if you want to get good at something, you have to be able to trudge through those hard times. But first, we have to find something you can commit to in the first place, right? It might not be Brazilian jiu-jitsu. It might be something else. So we want to sort of massage that in. And then I want to find a path that's going to work to whatever goals and ends that you have. I've got guys that want to compete in jiu-jitsu. We're getting them in shape, their techniques, we're wrestling with that. I've got other guys that want to be good hobbyists. They come a couple of days a week. They learn the technique. They can roll pretty well, right? But they don't want to go out on the mat because they don't want the stress and the aggravation and that, oh God, I got to compete now. They just love jiu-jitsu. Perfect. Be that guy. I don't care, right? It's okay for me. My job is just to sort of like guide your ship a little bit and help you and tell you, oh, you're getting a little closer to the rocks. Let's get back on track here, right? So the Synergy Center is our center. It's our wellness. It started as a largely a virtual platform when COVID and everything shut everybody down. But it also actually, a fair way to say it is, when we left Michigan, I had people in Michigan that still wanted to train with me, right? So we did things, you know, as best we could via, you know, FaceTime video and other things like that. And then when I went to Alaska, then people from Alaska still wanted to connect with me, right? Then we moved to New York, and then I've got students from New York that even so there's other gyms there, you develop a relationship and we know each other. So I can guide you to some level, right? So I've got several people still from New York that are doing, some are doing kickboxing and some are doing like the Wing Chun style and other things, right? And then we have a very nicely set up private gym, right? I modeled it after one of the jiu-jitsu instructors in California because he's like, I'm not paying for a school, right? So he's got a 3-car garage, he's decked it out with the mats, everything's good. Is he limited by size and scope, how many people could come? Absolutely. But he doesn't need to, right? He's got his gym, he's got his classes scheduled, everything's great. That's about the size and space that I can handle, right? To give you an example, because in my life, my children are my priority, my marriage is my priority, we homeschool our kids. So I'm at a certain time of day, I'm focused on certain things, right? It's not all about the gym. And that can be challenging, right? It was funny because that's about as much management. It's really easy. The systems are already in place. There's a ton of different platforms from Zen Planner and all these other things. They're just not software systems anymore. I set up my online classes, one click, we Zoom, I'm teaching, everything's logged in. It's all so manageable right now. It's very, very cool. I was teaching for a guy for a little while, and it was interesting because he had mentioned, he goes, I don't need you behind the desk. I need you on the mat, right? So because I was doing like kind of like the managing, and I was trying to do the teaching at the same time, you can't do all that, right? I can't talk to a parent about classes while I'm trying to teach five other kids. And he even said, he's like, man, you are so good on the mat, but you're like, he was the salesman. And he said, like, I can train you to be a good salesman, but that's not your thing, right? Your thing is teaching. And now with the systems that are in place for online programs, that's so beautiful, right? I don't have to be a wizard with sales and all those other kind of things. Yes, we're still managing the online presence and other things, but I can focus on what I want to do, which is I want to get in front of people and I want to kind of guide their journey a little bit to the extent that they need me. So we do have classes in person, and whether it's private or the group classes in the kickboxing, various kickboxing programs, or I tend to teach a lot of jiu-jitsu right now. It's the thing, you know, everybody. And then flavor. In Orlando, especially, yeah, it's, you can't swing a stick without getting a turn, like, or Florida in general, but it's so cool down here. So many tournaments. Now the big tournaments are here. The IBJJF tournaments, other things, it's really, really neat. So, I mean, for somebody like me, this is kind of the thing. And so I have kind of like that, like you said, that boutique niche kind of area. I would say even nowadays, like the John Fon JKD, that's everything, Filipino martial arts, all that stuff. There are pockets of people that are really passionate about those things. But if you think with the big schools nowadays, jiu-jitsu, right? There's some beautiful Muay Thai schools down here. But to find an actual Filipino martial arts school, that's tough. Right. There's some guys that are kind of have a little clubs here and there, but it's a different world. Right. And then, the thing that I was trying to create was kind of like a university setting where you could come in and here's a course on kickboxing. Here's Muay Thai. Here's Savat, et cetera, et cetera. Here are your course selections. And I don't want to mix them together for you. Right. I wasn't that one. I'm teaching you Muay Thai A to Z as it is. Right, the way I learned it, I don't like to. I'm going to take a little Muay Thai and a little Karate, and I'm going to mix it together and make a system. That anger, like I just, like I couldn't do that. If that's your thing, go ahead, have a good time. But to me, that's the end result of the student doing their own work, right? So all my programs were that way. That's almost a rarity nowadays, right? I don't think you're going to see the Kung Fu and the Philippine martial arts and the Silat and the jujitsu and the ketra. You're not going to see the distinct programs all laid out that way. What you will see is wrestling, jujitsu, boxing, Muay Thai at a school, right? Because those are the things that create MMA nowadays. Awesome. I love MMA, right? You know, I had a bunch of fights in MMA. I think it's fantastic. But I can do that now individually, right? If somebody wants to learn the Thai weaponry, the kebekabong, okay, we can work on that a little bit. If you want to learn the Indonesian silat, cool, we can do that, right? But it's easier to do, and for me, in some sense, right now, and it may change at some point, but it's just a little easier right now to do it in this platform, right? And then if people, we kind of joke about it, if people want to take a vacation, you want to come to Disney, then you just pop over and we'll do some training for a while, right? We're in the perfect place for vacation martial arts.
Yeah, that's a good concept, actually. Well, you know, I listen, you know, it's amazing that you actually created a different concept of martial arts world. And frankly, because as you said, most of the arts are unique on their own, their systems, they follow the certain ranking, certain protocol. They have almost like a curriculum that they follow from, you know, white belt on. Yeah. what you did is you have a curriculum for each of the arts that you know, and you put them all under one umbrella as an academy where you can learn these disciplines separately. And then whatever, like, again, when you as a student take all these courses, how you apply them in real life, that's up to you. You can combine them.
That's up to you.
Mm-hmm. But you, when you're learning Muay Thai, it's Muay Thai. You know, that's it. When you're learning kickboxing, mm-hmm. it's got BJJ is BJJ. You're learning something specific. You're learning that art. You're not mixing it up. You're not going to give me, you know, a little, you know, style that is, you know, completely off and throw it in there. You're not going to do, I don't know, karate, you know, spin kick, whatever, or taekwondo, you know, movement when you're doing this. And that's actually a unique, you know, concept in its own. And I love what you said that you and your wife do this, and you have other things, you know, yoga, dancing and all this stuff. It's a variety mm-hmm. of opportunities for different people. And you also articulate very well the idea that, you know, you're right. Martial arts, yeah. I've seen martial artists, you know, and top performers and professors in the 90s, not even 80s. And they're still at a peak and doing great stuff. But it's not the same, as you said, you know, you're not going to give mm-hmm. the full force in the 20s when in the 80s in the ring or in the mat. It's just not going to be the same. Now, are you skilled? Of course, these guys are super skilled. You know, they don't have to put a lot of energy to take somebody down, for example. But a younger, you know, equal, you know, talented and learned, you know, person is going to be able to do a lot more work. So it's you have to adapt those you know, certain styles at a certain point. I mean, maybe Aikido can be, you know, a better style at a certain point because you don't have to get a lot of energy, you know, exerted. You just got to move nice and sweet and make things happen. So there's a lot of things, you know, of that nature. You know, you don't have to carry people and throw them and all the stuff and get into the mat with them. So again, I love your formula. It's just exciting to know that there is that. I mean, and it is not MMA, as you said. This is beyond that. It's, as you said, MMA, they train everything because they combine all that in the ring and or the whatever the cage. Mm-hmm. You know, in your case, this is not that. You're teaching a different discipline. Like, you go to school, you learn math, accounting, you know, I don't know, science, this, that, the other, all the business law, and then you apply them in the real world when you go out there to work or study your own business. Same concept here. You learn different disciplines, different styles, and then whatever makes, you know, you as a student, you know, is going to make whatever that outcome is going to be. So I love the concept. Now I have a couple of questions. One is, you mm-hmm. know, people are different. You know, so and I love the idea that you kind of do an assessment to figure out what their needs are, and you know, which, by the way, that's perfect because, you know, and you added the fitness concept too. Like, it's not, this is not just the art. You want to see what the fitness level is. Mm-hmm. So it's like a gym, you know, and a martial arts combined. I mean, it's absolutely. 2-in-1. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's the mm-hmm. other that's the other beauty of your system, where you're wellness center. So I love that. And for audiences, you know, it is a unique format. And you know, for a lot of these arts, you have to go physically to a certain school or dojo to learn. In this case, you can literally, you know, reach out to Chris and work with him. Doesn't matter where, because he's already mastered the art of the virtual piece of it, and he's got, you know, clients. And yes, he can turn this into physical, you know, format through, you know, Zoom or other, you know, means, in a mat and so on and so forth. With a couple of people, you can do a lot of things, right? So you've done that. But now that the issue is, people sometimes they need the hand holding. And the discipline.
Sure.
You know, not everybody is, you know, so motivation and discipline, sometimes those two things, we use them, but they're really not one and the same. You know, motivation is flame that goes up and down and kind of dissipates, you know, it comes and goes, right? But discipline is everything. How do you get people, you know, to keep the motivation and stay disciplined at the same time?
Structure, right? Structure a program. So if your program is, hey, I'll give you an example. Way back when, if you went to a jiu-jitsu school, for example, you would learn whatever the teacher felt like teaching that day, right? And then maybe the next day you do something completely different, right? You're learning the guard one day, you're learning half guard the other day, you're doing throws on the third, nothing is organized, right? But because of the way we go through primary, secondary school, we go first grade, second grade, everything we do is structured. So the more structure I can give you, the more likely in the beginning you are going to follow through, right? So for example, if I'm teaching a 30-minute lesson, I will have at the end of the lesson already prepared your homework. So let's say you and I meet once a week virtually, right? I know what you're supposed to do Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday before we meet again on Monday, right? But if I leave you to your own devices, maybe you do it, maybe you don't do it, right? If you've got to think about in the beginning what the routine is, that's too much challenge. And then depending on how our interaction is and what you require, if you're the self-disciplined person, you're going to get up. And everything for me starts with 15 minutes, right? So if you're brand new, I'm only really looking for 15 minutes a day outside of the day that I teach you. Let's start that, right? So I look at this, even for myself, it's kind of my golden time, right? There's no phone except for round timer or whatever. I shut off the ring. If I've got my time, that's it. You don't interrupt me. This is what I'm doing. But I know I have other responsibilities, so I set my time. And I'll tell my students, listen, let's say this is week one. You and I just started, and you're really excited. You're really pumped. We're talking motivation, right? You're like, okay, we don't have discipline yet. We don't know if you're going to do this when you kind of feel like garbage and you know you need to work out, but you don't want to because Netflix has a new show that you want to see and whatever. Right? But I tell everybody, you don't have to train. This is an extra credit. This is your time. You spend it how you want to. And if you limit yourself in the beginning and say, I'm going to give even 10 minutes a day, you set the timer, you do a thing, and the timer goes off. And then you did 10 minutes. You think, well, I could do some more. What I tell everybody is train yourself to stop and then do it 10 minutes. And then next time we see, I want you to want it. I want you to want that more time. Then we add 12 minutes. But I don't want – so what happens, let's say you train Monday, we train Tuesday, you train for an hour. And then something gets a little bit – and Wednesday you think, well, I trained for an hour yesterday, so I should be good for 4 days. I don't – if I miss a couple, is that – that's up to you. I mean, what level of imperfection will you settle for, right? That's a thing, right? How not good do you want to be? That's okay. I look at it like this. I cherish, because right now I'm in micro workout time. Okay. I've got four kids from 15 to 5. They all have different school requirements and other things. Everything that I do, I get up early, I do my thing, but I time micro workouts throughout the day, right? It could be as simple as one of my favorite ones, my little finger extensors, right? When I'm teaching, I'm doing my thing, I'm gripping, I'm doing this. I am constantly doing, because I don't have time to go for 3 hours at a stretch. My life doesn't allow for that anymore, but I can do 5 minutes every, the top of every hour. Now my kids are old enough to do it with me. We'll do our Wing Chun form, whatever, right? So I have that benefit because that's how I set up my life, right? But I'm training them to want it, right? But I'm also saying that I don't want you to give yourself the excuse that, oh, well, because yesterday, then I can skip. No. Yesterday's gone, man. That's long gone. 24 hours ago doesn't exist anymore. This is earning today's time, right? So what I like to look at is limit your time so that by the end of the week, you feel like you didn't do enough. You want it more. Right. And then set schedules. The other thing I do for really busy people is I organize the micro workouts, right? 5 minutes, 10 minutes scheduled throughout the day. Could be conditioning a little bit. It could be, okay, you're going to do, you know, you're going to do your footwork for round one. And then a couple hours later, you're going to do your hand combinations. Then a couple hours later, you're going to do your kicks when you have time to get to the heavy or whatever, right? It's all organized and structured based on what you tell me your life is. And my goal is, because this is not a have to, I want to make it a want to, meaning you have to pay your taxes, you have to eat, you have to do certain things. You have responsibilities as husbands and wives, as parents. We have to do certain things. Maybe you're in school, you probably should do your homework, especially if you're in college and you're paying for this nonsense, right? But I want to change it to, I want you to feel it. I want you to want it. So you're looking at the clock and you know that at 1 o'clock, I get to stop this. And I don't care if you're sitting at a desk job and you're watching the clock at 1 o'clock, I'm taking a 5 minute break. I'm doing my finger stretchers and my little toe stretcher, whatever. What doesn't matter what it is. right? Because if you wanted to, you'll do it. But if you, the minute you think it's an, oh God, I got to do my forms today. No, you don't. I mean, you'll end up not being as good as you could be, but you don't have to, right? That's on you. I will. And what's on me is to keep reinforcing. Here's your structure. We've laid it out. Now, does life happen? We all know life happens. So if you miss something, get right back on it. If you can't do 15 minutes, do 10. If you can't do 10 minutes, do 5. Do something, do anything. Because then at least you can go to bed. If you did no training all day, right? I can give you a complete, in fact, I have for my kickboxing program, we can do a complete beginner level footwork routine in 3 minutes, like a 3-minute round in kickboxing, right? But if you do that every day for a week, you start to get that, okay, my feet work. You know, they're not just walking, but I'm doing this cool stuff. But imagine you do it every day for a month for 3 minutes. You go, oh man, I kind of get this idea. What happens after 6 months? Your footwork's looking sharp. Doing the same thing repetitively doesn't mean hours a day, but if I'm doing a 5-minute round of this and later a 5-minute round of, and I'll give you, for example, for myself, every Sunday I set up my work, my must-do list. I have 5 kickboxing combinations. That's all I allow myself to do all week. I don't change it. Every day, jab, cross hook, elbow, whatever it is, bum, 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 bum. I'll do that until I hate it, which is usually by Wednesday. I'm like, oh God, I got to do this again. But then you keep plugging through because after you get that, you're, oh, this is fun. And then there's that plateau where like, I know how to do this. But when you hit that point where the enlightenment part happened. Oh, I get it. Well, if I hook and they cover, that's you start to really understand what you're doing, right? Some people have been putting like the 100-hour rule out, right? If you do something 18 minutes a day for a year, you know, it's 100 hours of work. It's that kind of thinking, right? I don't need, and if I say to you, if you do a 3 or 5 minute round of footwork organized, right, the way I have it, and if you do it every day for 3 months, your footwork is going to look solid. But then that becomes our warm-up, right? I don't even have to tell the guy that when they come, they line up, their footwork, they know. They don't. If I'm running late because I got to do something with my daughter or whatever the thing is, if I'm something, you know, happens, I don't even have to tell them because now they feel it. They feel how good their footwork's becoming. It's organized, it's structured, and some adjustment necessary, right? We go on, we hit a road bump, or, hey, I really got this. Let's start adding some handwork to your footwork as you want, whatever, right? We assess, we adjust, and then we add, right? We move on a little bit, and we're in good shape. But because I've been down this road, I don't want it to take you 15 years to get your black belt in some discipline, whatever it is, right? Muay Thai, right? If there is such a thing, jiu-jitsu. I would like to get you in half as much time as it took me, let's say, arbitrarily, right? That means because I know the failures of my training, how I fixed it for myself, and the fact that, yeah, I'm 52, but every day I'm doing stuff. I'm getting ready to compete again. I'm nervous always to be the guy that is, like, for example, I'm a 4th-degree black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, right? I've been doing this a long time. I love it. But I don't want the stripe to be the inch on my belly, right? I want to be Megaton Diaz, who, amazing jiu-jitsu, physically a beast. He's fighting all the time. The man is impressive, right? So you find your models, you find what you're going to hunt after, you stop scrolling on Instagram for things that aren't going to develop you, right? And you just decide if you goof or you say, I didn't get, that's okay. Do something that day. I don't care if you have to like shadow box your elbows in the shower, just do something so that it counts for that day. And then, you know, then I don't even say make it up. I say do tomorrow's routine. If you missed the routine, you don't have to make it up. Just get to tomorrow's routine and we're all good, right? And I will keep guiding you. If you need the text messaging every day, hey, did you work out? I can do that, right? Not many people really like that, to be honest with you. I don't find that to be something that people need of me currently, but I know that's a thing. A lot of people like that kind of reinforcement. I currently don't have, I'm willing to reach out, but it just doesn't seem to be what my current crop of people is interested in. But what's really important is they want clear direction, organized around developed growth, and then adjusting and improving as we go. And if you can do that, there's nothing you can't learn. I mean, you can do whatever you want.
Well, I love, I mean, you've already like established a super formula because, for, like I said, again, I think your system is unique because it is not something that I've heard of before in terms of how you train. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is a coaching, fitness coaching, you know, formula that you apply into the martial arts, I think, which is very innovative because you kind of combined those two things and you made it in because you are talking like an actual life or fitness coach, you know, step by step in terms of, you know, you want people to be shaved. You want them. We didn't talk about nutrition, but I'm sure that's part of that. You want to, you know, because that's like that was my second question. People are going to be, you know, wanting all this, but sometimes they have their own beliefs or disbeliefs in their own way of doing it. And then they get to cheat a little bit because of whatever it is. I mean, food can be a pain, especially these days. So there's all these things, but you've covered a lot of those steps and how you get people really into the, and I love it because nobody can have an excuse and objection here because someone says, well, I can't do it for 10 minutes. Well, you can do 3 minutes, you know, and just, we can do it more often. And so the excuse of time or I can't do it is just not there. It may take a little longer, but the idea is you're going to just break it down to them so they'll still get what they need, you know, in one area at a time. So if, like you said, the footwork, are they going to work? It can be a month, it can be 3 months, it can be 4 months, it can be 6 months. But when they do that in the structure that you've established for them, they will get there. And once they get there, that's the thing. Once you get there, it becomes you. And then all you have to do after that is maintain it. And obviously you don't forget about it and stop. But then you can tack on and become good at a lot of things. And then you combine all these things, you know, eventually. Mm-hmm. And actually, again, this model applies in a lot of things, even in life. If we establish those things for our just regular routines and things that we want to do for our own selves, we can, whether it's learning skills or just being, you know, a good dad, being a good husband, a good whatever. I mean, employee, you can do certain things, waking up a certain hour. You know, those are the non-negotiables as a lot of coaches will refer to, right? You know, you make sure that it's happening. And that's the other thing. You can fit different people's needs accordingly. So that flexibility is important. So for people that are watching and listening, you know, it's a unique model. And I think it's a very effective model personally, because it can get anyone out there. Doesn't matter what shape, what level, you can still get there. So do not disbelieve in your, you know, abilities, because you can learn. And this will give you that. Because that's the other thing. A lot of people are intimidated by martial arts because there's a lot of brutal stuff. This is not just walk in and strolling. You're going to sweat. You're going to do a lot of work. And there's impact sometimes too. You know, and to get people the mindset that this is a shift. This is what you're going to be doing now. And this is what you're going to be learning. And I love what you said. You know, you're getting ready to compete again. I'm more of the guy that wants to be in martial arts all my life. I don't compete, but I love to be in it. I keep learning. I keep practicing. And that's it. Now, competing is a beautiful thing. I've done some of it, you know, back in the days in karate and in taekwondo, you know, and that's it. I mean, the art that I've been in, you know, there was no competition. We just trained. So because, you know, it's amazing that you want to be in it for the long run without anything stopping you. And we can do that. I do that myself for me. And I know the people that you are working with can be doing the same thing because you have the formula, the system, the steps that will make anyone really do it and even love it for that matter. Because, yeah, and I think the other thing that I enjoy about this discussion is that it's a buffet of arts. This is not one art. Because a lot of people are like, well, which art do I go to? Which one do I want? Sure. Here, they will learn for, you know, each one of them through your menu. And then they can become experts in one versus the other. That's on them. I mean, you can, you know, advance them into one area versus the other as they see that. But they have to go through the whole system. And that makes them a full, capable, you know, individual, because it is amazing. If you can learn all these disciplines separately and put them together, there is a mastery there, right? Because some people say, like, I want to be the master of one thing, which is fine. But, or I could be, you know, knowledgeable about all of these things because they all have something to offer and they can come in handy at a certain point in my life. Mm-hmm. And the teachings are very similar in the formula, in the concept.
Sure. See if this makes any sense. As a kindred spirit, right? We've been around a lot of the same places. We're talking about the same things. The way I frame it for myself is a martial art is a vehicle of self-mastery, right? I'm not mastering martial art. I'm mastering myself. I just happen to be using for the moment Wing Chun to do that because Wing Chun teaches me certain things about myself, but then so does Muay Thai. So I've been on this a long time, this model of thinking, because when people say, hey, I want to master X, Y, or Z, okay, what are you mastering? Those are concepts that exist in the ether. Wing Chun, yes, it's an art, but if you're not doing it, it doesn't exist for you, right? It has to be performed, right? So what I look at is the art is about you mastering yourself, right? Now, if you understand Wing Chun really well, when you go to learn Muay Thai or vice versa, because you know yourself, you can learn other things. I think people get stuck up in a little bit, the idea, oh, I want to master Wing Chun and I'll be the great Wing Chun guy, that which may be true, you know, for all I know. But I want to master myself. I want to master physically. I want to master emotionally. I want to master what it is I'm doing and how I use the conceptual basis of such and such martial arts in daily life, right? When I'm grappling, for example, so I'll put it to you like this. Wing Chun is a huge deal for me. I love it. It's a fantastic art. But it is in everything I do, right? I understand Muay Thai better because of what I understand about myself from Wing Chun, because I put so much of my time and effort into Wing Chun, I understand my elbow position. So when we're learning Muay Thai clinch positions or something, I'm thinking in my mind, this is like Fong Sao and Wing Chun, and this is this and this and that, because it all crosses over, right? So the more things that I see and I invest in, that's just kind of my own little flip it, right? This is helping me master myself. Right? Am I a Muay Thai guy? Cool. I guess if that helps you, you know, like plug it down. But really, this is just about me figuring out myself and what my possibilities are. Right? Instead of saying I'm limiting myself to Wing Chun and I'm going to be a great Wing Chun guy. Oh, okay. If that's important to you, it doesn't happen to be important to me. Right? Now, there have been times like if I do the forms, people say, "Well, your Wing Chun's pretty good, but your Muay Thai, it's okay." Right? That's fine. Right. Usually people that are more specialists, they have a deeper understanding? Maybe. I don't know. But everything crosses over. If I understand my posture and how my spine works and everything from Wing Chun, or one of the biggest things that influenced my boxing was the Indonesian sila. How they use their legs to generate power was a huge, huge help in how to understand the rotation, because it's all the same thing. But the teaching model of Silat opened my eyes to something I could use for boxing, right? It doesn't mean that all of Silat applies to all of boxing, but you get the idea. But what it did is any martial art is, unfortunately, it's a little bit selfish. It's just about me learning about myself, mind, body, and spirit, and making myself better generally, right? People look at it and say, well, you're just a generalist. Yeah, I'm just as good of me as I can be. If it happens to be me expressing Wing Chun or it happens to be expressing other things, that's fine. I think that I was fortunate that I kind of got this in my psyche early. I'm not trying to master Wing Chun. I don't even know what it means to say I've mastered Wing Chun. To me, that doesn't make any sense, right? I don't understand, because there's always further places you can go. If you want to say, hey, I'm ranked as a master instructor in Muay Thai under the title. Okay, fine. That's a title that was granted to me by my teacher. Great. That's wonderful. I'm honored to own it. But what does it mean if my form is garbage? Right? What if it means if I don't understand the art? It doesn't mean anything. Right? So it all comes back to me understanding myself, my body, and be able to reproduce these things, whether it's the arts individually. So to me, anytime you look at something and you go into it, I'm not trying to master that thing. I'm trying to use that thing to master me. I don't know if that makes any sense, or if I'm sort of, it's getting a little weird, but that's just how I view it.
Actually, Chris, you've given this whole thing a whole new angle that many people may not have discovered about what it is. But I think you're really are speaking the truth here, because I think if you speak to any true martial artist, they'll tell you it's about them. It's always mm-hmm. about the person, and it does bring who you are, and it does make you who you are in a lot of ways. And you're right, generalist, specialist, it doesn't matter. It's really what it converts to you. And you can apply these things into your, you know, your style in the arts and in life. And mm-hmm. I know that these things cross over left and right, you know, any given moment, right? So again, you've shared with us a lot of philosophical things that are applicable today that people may not even have entertained as a thought or an opportunity, because, you know, people look at martial arts just like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go learn this because I'm going to go fight. Or I'm going to go learn this art because it's beautiful. I love this stuff. But what you've done here is you've changed the at least the philosophy of the minds, right? You know, we can do a lot more under one umbrella, and we can learn different things. We can apply all these things, and it all mm-hmm. means, you know, who we are, and it can, you know, really shape the person, the individual, you know, themselves into whoever they want to be. And they can, you know, literally elevate one level versus the other, because now you have the ability. And as you advance, you will have those skills to do these things. And you can, that's the other thing. The beauty is that you can apply these things accordingly. Not every mm-hmm. single moment things are going to happen the same way. Well, listen, we've gone way before the hour, but it was just so.
It was super, my pleasure.
Super fun stuff, man. So now, if people want to join, you know, your system and your, you know, wellness Synergy Wellness Center, how do they mm-hmm. do go about it? And you know, what's the steps to do that? I mean, just go online to your site.
Yep, go online to the site, set up a time, we'll chat. You know, the Synergy Center Global is our hub for everything. Then you can also find CoachChrisMalgeri.net is the website. It's getting always rebuilt and built up. And then from there, as we start, we're in the process of finalizing the our online portal for each individual program that we're gonna have. So there's a kids portion, there's a homeschool kids portion, there's the various martial arts, and those will all be accessible as you might imagine on any kind of online portal. I just think ours will be pretty, I hope it will be pretty impressive, because it's going to have a vast array of options for you to kind of dig into. We have a quick chat. You let me know what you want to do and, you know, how you want to set up your time. Typically we do things, we have different memberships. So you're just, you know, how you want to train once a week, you want to train once a month, whatever you want to do. Right. I can accommodate it. And then, like I said, we'll build a training program around what you're doing. Generally speaking, we'll pick a time frame. We'll say we'll adjust it every so many weeks, and we'll find a way to really bring something that is going to be something that you can have a passion about, and something that, even if it's not, maybe we'll do some fitness thing, because maybe I have one person, her passion is hiking, right? So we work on protecting her ankles, knees, and hips so she can hike more. I don't know. Let's figure it out together. And then let's get everybody on the path to improving that sort of that sense of wellness and well-being.
That sounds terrific, and I think you're giving people the opportunity to do what they want, and I think, you know, hopefully more people can get this, you know, access to this show, because many people may not have, as you said, you know, somewhere close to train in this formula. Mm-hmm. They can train, doesn't matter where they are, they can still get access sure. to all, and really, instead of changing, you know, trainers and instructors or dojos and schools, here you can get all that in one, you know, one-stop shop, you know, and, you know, from any distance that you can be, as long as you can get virtual, you can do this. Now, one question that I have, and we'll close today, is what about, you know, as you stated earlier, like finding someone to train with? I mean, is there a way to maybe match people together so they can practice together? And, you know, in some of the arts where you really have to take someone like an uki.
I have a program where, like, you got a training partner, you got a buddy. There's some people we work a lot with families. One of the things I do for, like, the homeschool curriculum, for example, is when we lived in Alaska, homeschool is a really big deal. And sometimes it's hard to get to places in a lot of those communities where they have any training. So I have trainings for the kids programs where I teach the parents how to train their children. Right. So I'm training you to take my place. Right. How we're doing the weapons, how you can work with them to express the art. If you don't have a training partner, a brother, sister, father, mother, whatever is available to you. I don't have a matching kind of system yet. Right. But what I do encourage is if, for example, you're coming in and say, hey, I want to do this with a friend of mine and we're going to do so I can train you both. That's all the better. Right. Usually that's how it's been happening, and I'll encourage that. I've got a couple of husband and wife groups that the husband came in to do stuff, and then we slowly massage the idea of the wife training with them, but we also modify what's happening, right? Sometimes the ladies are they want to hit the focus mitts hard. Sometimes they want to work on the what we might call chi-sa sensitivity drills from Wing Chun. Who knows, right? But if somebody's not immediately interested, maybe we could see if this is something that they're willing to play with. It is all you really need is one human being that you guys can have fun. Most important thing, have fun, train safely and intelligently together, right? We can go far in this. If you don't, nowadays, especially a grappling dummy, if you want to do jiu-jitsu, if you're doing the Filipino martial arts, for example, there are a couple recommendations I would make as far as, like, you're going to have your two sticks, and then there's a really neat, they call it a stick bag, which is it's a long pole that you can hang up, but it's thin, so you can work the weaponry training on it, and I can keep you busy forever with that, because you just need contact with something. So we can work around whatever you've got available until that improves, right? I also work a lot where I'm not the primary coach, but if you're working somewhere and they're doing a lot of jiu-jitsu, but maybe they're not doing the weapons or something else, you might use me to supplement some of the other things, right? I'm not taking anybody away from anybody else's training. Right. You want to, you know, use what I have as a supplement to what you're doing. Cool. Do that too. Right. It's all kind of just available. Really what we need to do is we can connect, see if we fit. Right. See if we're going to butt heads on certain aspects, maybe I'm not the guy for you. I mean, that's entirely possible. Right. But then again, I've been doing this a little while and I think I can formulate a healthy, intelligent plan for most people, right? As long as they're willing to put in that required amount of work every day.
Well, thank you. And I think you just opened up, you know, I mean, my eyes and ears, but I think our audience as well. The idea is that, you know, a lot of times we train individually when we go to these places. And, you know, mm-hmm. I love the concept of family together training and practicing with your kids, your spouse. You know, that's a beautiful thing. A friend, a partner, you know, where, you know, even when you do an art, you know, you want to bring some, I can't do that. But now you have this body right. system that you can have. So it is mm-hmm. an open, you know, territory, and it's uncharted territory because, as you said, you can be in a formal school, you know, going to a dojo to a gym daily. But you're right. You learn in one style, and now you want to complement and supplement, you know, with different, you know, things. You want to learn the sticks. You want to look at the knives. Maybe you want to do the Wing Chun.
Absolutely.
Whatever. You know, so you can get those things added as basically, you know, bonuses to your, you know, style. And again, the thing is, guys, all this stuff is beautiful. Every art is beautiful. You can learn different things from all these systems, and you have them all in one place with Chris. So I love that concept. Now, again, we're coming to the end of the show. I have enjoyed the discussion. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's a beautiful topic. I love this. And you just give it a better spin in terms of the discussion, especially in the concept that you've developed here. Because I think it is innovative. It is really post-COVID. I think we need this because in that era, it was very difficult to figure out things. You said it earlier, gyms closed, and they were the first one and probably the last ones to reopen in this post-pandemic stuff. Mm-hmm. And sometimes. So your system is to go anywhere, anytime. There is no disruption. The only thing that can stop this is if we have no internet. So
that's true. That's true.
But that goes for my shows too. But that, yeah, for a lot of things, right? But the mm-hmm. fact is, you know, it is a safer environment, you know, and you said it, you know, you have the ability and you're flexible enough to make it work, and you're always constantly making it happen. So I want to commend you and, you know, thank you for doing the work you're doing and changing the philosophy of how some of these things can combine. And anybody that's progressive in their mind and that loves the martial arts, this is a very way, you know, a very unique way and a very innovative and progressive way, as I call it, you know, to look at martial arts in a different light and really learn the other stuff, you know. So here you go, folks. There's a chance here to do this. So, Chris, before we wrap up, you know, any last words of wisdom to our audiences today?
Once you establish why you want to do something, get in shape, have a hobby, I think you're going to figure out your why. Then you can figure out what method you're going to commit yourself to. You're going to have a lot more success, right? Because I think a lot of times people dabble, they try this, they try that. But once you can connect to something, connect to a group of people, connect to a coach, then you're really going to have a lot of success. You're going to have peaks and valleys, right? There's going to be great training times. There's going to be workouts that you feel like you just, you know, sort of lost the plot on the whole thing. That's okay, right? None of us are perfect. We're all just trying to more or less weave this path forward for as long as we're allotted the time.
All right. Well, there you have it, Chris. Thank you so much for being with us today. It's been
my pleasure. You take care.
Thank you. And folks, there you have it. Hope you enjoyed, learned a lot of things, and there's certainly an opportunity here. So please do check out the website link on the description of the show, connect with Chris and see where that takes you. And, you know, if you're not in it yet, this could be a beginning of a long journey and an exciting one. That being said, American Age, we'll see you. We'll talk to you soon. New day, new show on the topic, new guest. Bye for now.